For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the History Worth Saving podcast. You can find more online at historyworthsaving.com. Right there, you can sign up for the monthly newsletter, subscribe to the podcast, and even join our Facebook group, where we learn, share, and preserve great American stories just like this one. With nearly 35,000 members, Wade Peebles, his Georgia Folk and Farm Life Group, has become something really special. In fact, the community of members have found a digital home on Facebook right there in the Georgia Folk and Farm Life Group. But inside they share all types of nearly extinct knowledge. Knowledge of the old ways and the old days around farms and country life. Members there, they also share stories, lots and lots of stories. In fact, that's my favorite. In a lot of ways, Georgia Folk and Farm Life serves as a really big front porch. I don't know how else to describe it. You know, for the last 2 years that I've been following their progress, and the main reason I wanted to have Wade on this show is that Wade's been able to bridge the digital divide with this group. You see, the Georgia Folk and Farm Life group, they don't just meet online. They actually meet in person. Now, I know what you're thinking. These people, why would they meet up? My parents, they can't even spell the word Uber, let alone ever dream about meeting anyone from the internet. But Wade's found a way. And by the looks of these gatherings that they host, they're about four parts church picnic, three parts family reunion, three parts Georgia Folk and Farm Life stuff. They're just incredible. And here to tell us all about how he's done it, the man who has dreamt all of this up, Mr. Wade Peebles. Wade, thanks for being here.
Well, Matt, I appreciate you having me. It means a lot to me, and I thank you for it.
Now, you're talking to us today from your home, and because you live out in the country, as I would totally expect and hope,
right,
you're on a landline. Awesome.
One of the last landlines. It's not a wooden telephone with a hand crank, but it is a landline. Yeah.
Before people start thinking this, because I know like a few of them are going to think, well, this guy, you know, he's probably some hotshot marketing guy from Atlanta that's moved south, but that's not the case. I mean, you drive a log truck during the day.
I am the stereotypical Georgia log truck driver, yes.
Isn't that incredible? And yet you've pioneered this new group. Well, it's not new. It's a few years old with nearly 35,000 members. I mean, you say that and you think, what on earth are these people craving? And the answer is these old, lost knowledge nuggets, if you will. This morning, I learned that you shouldn't baptize an egg. And I'm guessing you mean you shouldn't dunk it underwater. So these are eggs that are about to hatch. You just kind of sprinkle them with water, and that actually helps the chick get out. I never knew that.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we have that many members, and we're adding, I looked this morning, almost 2,600 members per month, and it's a phenomenal growth. And like you say, people may wonder why. What is it about Georgia Folk and Farm Life? And it's just a community of people that share two things. They have a lot of knowledge and wisdom that's set to be lost. And they have a love of not only retaining it, but passing it on. So we have a lot of old members. We've got a lot of young members. But the key to it is not, this is not about so much history as it is about tradition.
Well, and I get that. And these things are, it's sort of like the church in a lot of ways, right? Where does the dogma stop and the tradition part begin? So I hear you, but the thing is that so much of this tradition and knowledge is being lost. I give another example. these fat lighter logs. So we have a farm, right? And I'm up there, and I'm worried about the old wood stove, and I'm thinking, you know, that there's got to be a better way to do this. And then boom, right there, a whole story on fat lighter logs. And you know, a kid from Texas, we don't have trees in South Texas, not big trees. So I'd never heard of this. And tell folks what that is, because a lot of our listeners aren't going to have any idea either.
Well, along coastal Texas, y'all have them, but Texas being a big state, you've got just about every geography that could be had there. So you can have a lot in Texas, and Georgia's a large state too, and that's part of what Georgia Folk and Farm Life started as just that, Georgia, but it's become much more. I thought about changing the name, but I had a mutiny erupt when I suggested it. Some of the old members, no, we'll leave. I don't know if they would have left, but no, fat lightered is, the word lightered is a corruption of the word lightwood, and the longleaf pine that stretched, the belt that stretched from Virginia to Texas along the coast, about 75 to maybe anywhere from 50, 75, 100 miles inland along the coast of the southeast. The longleaf pine, yellow pine species, was a dominant pine in that area, and it has a high concentration of rosin naturally in it. And that and the slash pine were the two trees that were turpentine that were for the naval stores industry. And that industry helped make the tar and things to seal ships, where the name came from, naval stores. But turpentining and related chemicals that were got from the old pine, longleaf pines, were a great part of our culture up to about 50 years ago. But those trees, just naturally having so much tar in them, when they die, the heartwood is left over, and the stump of the tree will last for many, many years, hundreds of years, and persist because of the tar in them. And you go out and find those old stumps. Like I say, they were called lightwood because they were used for torches, and that term has been corrupted in the South into lightered. So lightered is the wood from those old stumps, from those old longleaf pines and slash pines. They've been gone for years. The trees have been gone for years, but those stumps remain. And you can chop them up and splinter them and into splinters, and they make great kindling. They burn fiercely, and they're called fat wood because they burn like grease or wood if you burn it for fuel. You know, it pop and snap. They make a lot of black smoke, but they sure are good cannon to get a fire going.
I can already hear my chimney guy saying, no, don't go burning that stuff. It's going to leave a residue. But you just burn a little bit of it to help get the fire started.
Right. You don't want to roaring fire or, you know, with just fat lightered in your fireplace. I made that mistake once and almost burned the house down. So yeah. my wife was going to church on Wednesday night, and I had all the evidence of nearly having burned the house down gone by the time she came home.
So, well, yes, see, that's
not a fat lighter fire.
Come yeah, on. Don't do that. But I love that, because
I'm try this at home.
See, you're missing your calling. What you need now is an 800 number. And it just needs to roll to all of your members. So when rookie farmers like myself have a question, we just pick up the phone and call the 800 number, and you guys answer.
I might try that. That would sound like a good idea. But you know, Matt, how this got started, I know you've asked me that, and I'm going to jump the gun and go ahead and say, for years I had like many people, I was a lurker on Facebook. I had a laptop, and I'm 61 now, and like I say, I like self-deprecating humor, and I always refer to myself as a pseudo-intellectual in a redneck suit. And that's the way I've seen myself. And I've also been referred to as a walking encyclopedia of useless information. And I seem to retain the things that most everybody either naturally forget or choose to forget. I remember them. I used to talk to old people when I was a kid. I was that little kid that, you know, would go back inside where the old folks were and listen to them, ask questions. I wish I'd ask more questions, but at least I did ask questions. And when I saw something old or an old way of doing things, even as a kid, as a little boy, I was eagerly interested. So I had all this junk in my head, right? And when I had been on Facebook, and one day after just maybe commenting occasionally, but never knowing how to post, I decided, you know, I'll figure this out. I want to, and I started in a day. I figured out how it worked, and I, rather than the usual Facebook fare that most people put, I started writing on my page things about the old ways and things. And I had a friend that I had gone to school with, and another friend that's a great friend of mine, both tell me you should start a group. And I was unfamiliar with Facebook groups. I checked into that, and I said, yeah, I'll start a group. And I named it Georgia Folk and Farm Life. And looking back, I think I should have chosen a shorter title for it, a name. But it struck a chord, and it started growing slowly at first. But it has amazed me. But what it is there were a lot of groups out there where people shared old memories, photographs, and things. But I wanted ours to be different. I wanted it to be more about the people and the things that they recall that are getting lost. Just small, arcane things, little bits of knowledge and wisdom and everyday life, the common things. Not very little earth-shattering things are ever discussed on Georgia Folk and Farm Life, but thousands of the little things that made life many years ago. And so that's I think that's what's unique about it, is that we share a love. A lot of these people aren't familiar with a lot of it. I've got a lot of city people have been turned on to Georgia Folk and Farm Life. A lot of people that live in other countries and other states. We have members all over. But there's a unique combination. I post a lot and I write, but we have a lot of contributors who, I love them. They add a great depth to the group. And then we have people that just post occasionally little things. In the aggregate, it comes up as something unique.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think what is so fascinating about this is that you've developed a passion for these stories and this knowledge, and you get the fact that this stuff is, it's going away. I can't tell you how many, and I mean this sincerely, I can't tell you how many times I've thought over the last few years that we have owned our farm, man, I wish my great-grandfather was still around to tell me about this, and a story that comes to mind is around hog killing time. He had a knife, and I remember this knife, a big old hickory knife, and he was known for the way that he would slaughter the hog and at least kill it. I mean, that's a really delicate thing to do. You don't want him to squeal. Okay. You don't want, I mean, there's all this stuff wrapped up in the tradition. I love that, how you brought that out. There's a lot of stuff wrapped up in the tradition of how you do that. And apparently he was pretty good at it and would do this once a year, and all the neighbors would bring their hogs up. And that was part of it. These folks understood community. And, that's the whole thing right there.
I didn't interrupt you, but you hit on a key part of our success with Georgia Folk and Farm Life. We don't just recount the mechanics of how to kill hogs. We talk about how it was a community event, how it was a folk tradition that people got together. There were people. It was a hierarchy. I've written about that. A hierarchy of hog killing time. If a person killed many hogs, people would come to help. And according to where you stood in that hierarchy, you would take home bits of the hog, right? The family and close kin and neighbors might get some of the best parts, right? Then just folks that were laborers, lived down the road, that came to help, they'd get the lesser parts, right? But that was part. It was a community event. The same with making syrup. There's a lot of people probably that be listening might not be familiar with this time of year is coming up on syrup making time with cane syrup, ribbon cane in Georgia. And that was a community event. Syrup kettles were in most farms, had them, and it was not just the syrup. Cane syrup wasn't so important as a sweetener, but it was such an important part of everyday life. It was such a common food that we don't appreciate how common and how basic ingredient in Southern life that syrup was, cane syrup. But it wasn't just the mechanics of making it, with a mule turning the sweep and turn the rollers of the old mill, and the people, kids and old people, like feeding the cane into the rollers and drinking the juice, and then the boiling of the syrup in the kettle, and how people sat around and watched that and enjoyed it, and how hypnotizing it was. It was like a mesmerizing thing to watch that process where cane juice was reduced to syrup. but it became a community event. People came, and there was romance, and there was intrigue, and there was trouble. Kids got their behinds whipped. It was just a social event.
Right.
Like no other. Young folks slipped off into the dark at night and cane grindings and syrup boilings, and there were many children born today because of cane grindings. Their marriages took place. But it was just more than just syrup. But when you open, for a true Southerner that opens a bottle of cane syrup today, just that smell hits your nose. It can evoke all of that. And that's what we talk about, those kinds of things. It's not just the mechanics of how things were done, but the social impact and what a big part of life these little things were in an aggregate. When you put them all together, that was life. And it means a lot to a lot of people to learn these things if they didn't know them, or to reminisce and be reminded of them. We have every day, I think, oh, thank you, Wade, for reminding me of that. I had forgotten about that. Oh, that brought back memories of my daddy, my grandpa, my uncle, so-and-so, my grandmother. And that's the rewarding part of it, is when you have people say, it made me think about something or somebody that I loved and had forgotten that particular thing.
You know, it bothers me a lot. I talked about this on our first episode, and I'm going to keep talking about it because it really, I think there's something to this. You know, I love this country more than I can put into words. And the reason we started this podcast and this whole venture of History Worth Saving is that we don't know our neighbors. And if you don't know somebody, it's really hard to like them. And then it's really hard to empathize with them and understand, you know, their point of view. And I worry that worry that this country, Wade, is so divided right now, and it has been that we don't even realize it anymore. It's turned into this kind of the word that floats around a lot. You hear is tribal politics, and you hear all of this partisan stuff. And the fact of the matter is, this Pew study that came out from the Pew Research Center that talked about how few Americans actually know their neighbors. What I find so interesting on this is that this knowledge and this sense of community has been all but lost, and here you are, sort of a cultural warrior, if you will, out there trying to save a little bit of it. And that's what I hope we can highlight on History Worth Saving, are people just like yourself that have stepped up to the plate, maybe unknowingly, but have stepped up to the plate and are trying to save some of this. And in the meetups, talk to me about the meetups, because, man, I wanted to come down to the last one, but we had a tropical storm and we were a little busy up here, but tell me about the meetups.
Well, the idea of a gathering, I'm not sure how it started. It may have been my idea or some member, but when people got so enthusiastic about the group, we got to know one another. We have an amazing number of active members, but we have a core group of hundreds that participate in such a way that I got to know, I know their names, and we all know each other's names. And those people participate more actively than many. Many people, you know, read. I get insights from Facebook, and I know how many people look at things, read things, and such. But we have this large core group of people that are very enthusiastic. And we know each other's names, and we know a lot about each other only through this group. And so we wanted to meet, because the enthusiasm level for so much of this is incredible, because people were starved for a place to reminisce and be nostalgic and share little things, little tidbits of life that they just don't have anybody to talk to about it, you know? And they have a burning desire to talk to people and meet like-minded people. That's a very fundamental thing. So the idea of a gathering, we had one, and it was fairly successful. Then we had a second. And I started this group in May of 2016, which is fairly young, and there's a lot of growth to be a young group. But when we wanted to get together to put faces to the names and be more than just a name on a Facebook group and a profile picture. You know, and it has been, each one has been better than the last, and we hope to have many more. But the gatherings, I called it that. I came up with the name of the gathering because that's what it is. It's a gathering of people with similar interests, and a desire to meet and talk about things. And at the last gathering, we had some great food, and we got some great cooks. And that's another part of Jordy Polk and Farm Life. It's part, we have, people have put a picture of what they had for Sunday dinner on there, and people love it. It'll get thousands of views and likes and reactions, comments. People will put a family recipe on there. And then they'll take, you know, they might pay a picture of their dog. But then again, we'll have, plowing with mules years ago and have people used common household goods for medicine in the day, from turpentine to lard to spider webs and soot. And then might have one about leather, how important leather was in days past before there was plastic and man-made materials, how leather was depended on. So you got so many people interested in so many things. And it's just natural to want to meet one another and get together. So we had preaching and we had hymn singing, and separate from the meal. So it's a day of people getting together with enthusiasm that have nothing in common except a love for Georgia Folk and Farm Life. Facebook group.
Well, and I love how that's the point here. How improbable is that? But here's the thing. You don't post a picture on there of your Sunday dinner because you want people to know what you ate. You want to remind people that there was a tradition and that there was this way of life of having a huge Sunday dinner.
It's not a picture, you know, a plate of lasagna. No. I guarantee you.
Right.
It's if they put it on there, it's a beautiful ham and a country ham and some black eyed peas and butter beans and potato salad.
But it's right. Grandma's Listen, cooking, you know.
Cornbread has become symbolic of Georgia Folk and Farm Life.
Sure.
Fried cornbread, I think, is the most popular thing. I could write every day about fried cornbread, and I don't think a member would chastise me for wearing a subject out.
Right, but it's not just the cornbread; it's what it represents, and that's what I think
that's
is so
right.
awesome. I think that's incredible, and that's what I'm happy to see being saved. Now, the other part of this, and this gets a little uncomfortable because I know you don't like to self promote, but you have a real gift, Wade, and I guess it's all those miles in the log truck as a writer. And I was hoping that we could. You have another little personal deal that you do called Wade Writes, and it's just some of your writing, and I love it. I think it's wonderful. Would you humor everybody that's listening to this? It's just you and me and a friend over here listening to all this conversation. That's what I like to say. I know there's a lot of people that listen, but what I love about this is that it's just you and me and Wade, and that's the great thing about this. Would you read us a little something this morning?
Or yes,
we're recording this in the morning. Someone might be listening to it late at night, but I'd love to have you read something.
Well, thank you, Matt. I've always wanted to be a writer, and I write the things that the everyday little essays and discussions of things on Georgia Folk and Farm Life. In addition, I've started writing fiction short stories. I love writing fiction short stories, and kind of similar to what Flannery O'Connor did. I would love to be like Flannery O'Connor. She's my favorite writer. But, I started writing these fiction short stories and then eventually started a new group to highlight those Wade Writes. And this is a short one I chose. It's called The Old Goblet. He drove with his mother to decide, having left the kids and wife at home. He asked her to stay the night with them after they had gone back to their house, and she said no, it was time to go home after they had eaten. They were all worn out, and he was glad that the service went so well, and the graveside service, too. It was, as was accustomed, brief. Daddy had only been sick for 3 weeks, and then he was gone. How Mama could stand it, he didn't know. The house was empty except for her now. How empty it would be for her, he could not imagine. His mind went first to his house, so full of noise and kids and pets and life. Then as the headlights hit it, as they had countless times in his life, he saw the old farmhouse he had never seen it before, truly empty. He thought about the times as a boy when he would ride with his brothers and sisters and Mom and Daddy, and the car would turn into the driveway and light up the house. He thought of the times as a boy and a man that he had driven up to his Mama's house, and it was funny how we all do that. We say Mama's house and referring to the place, even when our daddies are omnipresent. He, the only one still living nearby, he, the baby, her youngest, he felt as if he were a small child again, needing to be lifted up by the strong hands of his mama, or by the stronger hands of his daddy. But it was not to be. He had to be strong now. He wondered if his daddy were ever a little boy too, really a little boy. It seemed strange that he might have once have been. He wondered if his daddy ever got scared and had a hard time thinking about that. He helped her up those steps, steps that they had all run to death when younger, if they had all were then. Daddy was so strong, so little afraid of anything and anybody, and but too not afraid of dying. He had wished he would have been a bit scarier at his so for their sakes. He had embraced death without the customary fight all of his foes had learned to expect from him. He told his mama he would check the house and go out to turn the heat lamp on at the pump house as it was going to be very cold in the morning. And he locked the back door on his way back in as he would do the front door on his way out. He would stay a few minutes with her, not wanting her to know how much he wanted to be gone, being that selfish little boy, needing his hurt soothed, not knowing how to soothe hers. There was nothing he could say. He had tried saying it all. Words never say enough. As he stepped quietly through the screen porch and into the kitchen, he saw her standing with the old goblet in her hands. She was holding it to the light and staring. It was the only one she had like it, and he seemed to recall her having said she got it long ago in a box of washing powders, a premium they were called. Again, he watched her look at it as if it were a jewel chalice, and his mind went back to when he was a little boy, very little. He recalled those times when, just a little bit of a boy, he would for some reason wake up during the night and, seeing the light burning dim in the kitchen, toddle in to join his mama and daddy there. Those were magical times, the other kids older, asleep, to be up early for the school in the morning. They knew nothing of those secret meetings. Those magical times were just for the three of them, daddy, mama, and him. How special he was and how special he felt, knowing it was their secret. It was the same each time, almost like a real dream. He would wander in and they would be standing close together, so close, and there would be the goblet in her hand. In it she would have put the freshest of light bread pulled into pieces, ladled with milk and covered with sugar. It was mixed with that old silver spoon as she fed herself and daddy. Then, as naturally as if they were expecting him, she placed a spoonful of the cold dessert into his mouth. She never used that old goblet, that old spoon, nor did she ever mix bread and milk and sugar at any other time, and they never spoke of it, and the concoction never had a name. It was sweet how she'd always made it a special thing just for the three of them. He was that sweet, innocent little boy again, as his mind had gone back to those nights so many years ago on this very spot. He was brought back to the present, and he looked at the old goblet much as she had. Then she looked away, and then at him. As she saw him looking, the instant of redness in her face, the hand she threw in front of her mouth, told him all in an instant. The giggles and tears that poured from her told him also. He felt like such an idiot. He had patted on quiet little feet all of those times, not as the guest of honor at a toddler's banquet, but an intruder on a lover's feast. Welcome with love, but a tiny intruder all the same. He was so embarrassed, and so was she. Then laughter caught them both and enveloped them, and it was almost felt as if his daddy was still there laughing with them. This terrible day had ended better than he expected, and he prayed there would be more like it to come.
Wow. Can't you just see him standing there? You know, how many times do you think, Wade, people have had that experience? But it's that look back, and then you realize in an instant, that's all gone. I love it. What a great piece.
The clarity of an adult mind, looking back on it, the child mind that you experience things with, that's a key there that also to this process of having this group that we have to preserve tradition and memories, is we look back and now we see, you know, one thing, Matt, that I've written about also is how we, when we have nostalgia for things we hated at the time.
Right. Right.
I mean, that is an amazing thing, how we long and have such bittersweet nostalgia for times that at that time we hated. We didn't like a farm. We didn't like working in a family business. We didn't like the thing. We hated it. We hated our parents at the time, right, when we were young. And there were many times we wished we'd been anywhere but where we were, and we didn't like being a part of that process and that life. But looking back on it, it's one of the, we love it with a tenderness that we can't even describe.
Well, I
that's
think
amazing that we can be nostalgic. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is a natural thing. No one should be ashamed to really, really deep down remember when they're being nostalgic and waxing poetic about their childhood And when they full in the knowledge of how they hate it, then there's nothing wrong with that. You shouldn't be ashamed of that. That is as natural as anything in human in the human condition.
Well, I love it, and I love everything that that you guys are carrying on over there. And listen, I hope that you will take a look at Georgia folk and farm life, even if you're living in Massachusetts. You know, Wade, you don't mind if a Yankee signs up, do you?
We have Yankees and we love them. We have one of our favorite members, Miss Connie Winter. She lives in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and we have, and that's just one. I pick Miss Connie as a but we've got members all over, and that's like I said. I talked about changing the name just to Folk and Farm Life, and there was a crowd at my door with pitchforks and torches, you know, not literally, but they threatened a mutiny if I had changed the name of it. But it says Georgia, but it's for everybody.
I think it's great. Well, Wade Writes is the group there for Wade's writing, and then Georgia Folk and Farm Life, 35,000 members strong. But you know, they would love to have you sign
Amen.
Up on there. So go over there and do that. Listen, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you, Wade. You know, my new book's coming out, "Tales from High Bluff: Stories My Grandfather Would Like," and I think you'd like it. I'm going to have to send you a copy of it when it comes out. It's coming out in December. Yeah, it's coming out in December. Going to be a lot of fun there to get that out there. But I would hope that while you're on there poking around Facebook, maybe you'd have some advice here, Wade. History Worth Saving has had a page. We launched a group because you can't exchange ideas and stories very easily on a page. So we have a new group. And I need some help finding these stories, finding people like yourself that are doing great stuff. So if anybody wants to jump in there and share stuff, believe me, we'd love to have you there at History Worth Saving. It's a very small group right now of folks that think these stories like Wade's are important. And I think we need some help. And I hope you come back on, because there's so much we didn't get a chance to talk to today. We're just about out of time, but I hope you'd come back on and share some more. Well, Wade, I really appreciate you coming on. And again, it's Georgia Folk and Farm Life there on Facebook, and Wade Writes. I can't believe we're out of time, but we got to keep these things short.
We'll do it again.
We'll do it again, and we'll have everybody on. Wade, thanks again for coming on. All right. Talk to you real soon. Listen, if you haven't already signed up for the newsletter, go to historyworthsaving.com. Sign up for the monthly newsletter. We'll keep you in touch with things that are going on. And please, and I mean this, sign up for the group, because we have to continue this conversation. It is absolutely critical that we do it. Next time on this show, I said I wouldn't pre-sell the show because things happen, but I'm going to pre-sell it. We have a lady, young lady, who has sold everything and is embarking on a journey into the woods that's just going to blow your mind. I'm telling you, it is an incredible story. And her journey of going back into the woods is just going to leave you... Well, I'm not going to say anymore. You got to stay tuned to History Worth Saving. How's that for a hook? We'll have her on next week. My name is Matt Jolly. This has been History Worth Saving, the podcast. The features, we have a lot of features on the website right now, longer format stories. They're still up there, and I'd love for you to take a look at them. But until next time, get out there and know your neighbor. We'll talk to you next week. So long for now.